This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. Today we're celebrating the work of artists from the legendary label Stax Records, which was based in Memphis and produced some of the most important soul music of the 60s. Stax's 50th anniversary is being commemorated with concerts and reissues by Concord Records, which acquired the Stax catalog, and by a documentary which airs next week on PBS called Respect Yourself, The Stax Records Story. Isaac Hayes recorded several hit records for Stax, including Hot Buttered Soul, Black Moses, and Shaft, and he was also an important behind-the-scenes figure, working as a producer, songwriter, and arranger. He co-wrote hits for Sam and Dave, Carla Thomas, and Johnny Taylor. Hayes was also well known for his role as chef in South Park before he left the show last year. And despite a stroke in January, he's still performing, touring in the U.S. and Europe this summer. Terry spoke with Hayes in 1994 about his work at Stax Records. She asked him what he remembered about writing Sam and Dave's hit, Soul Man.
I remember getting the idea from watching TV and the riots in Detroit. And it was said that if you put soul on your door, your business establishment, they would bypass it and wouldn't burn it. And then the word soul, you know, the clenched fist, you know, soul brother, soul this. It was a galvanizing kind of thing as far as, you know, African-Americans were concerned. And it had that kind of effect of unity. And they said it with a lot of pride. So I said, well, why not write a tune called Soul Man? And all you had to do was write about your own personal experiences because, you know, all African Americans in this country, during those times especially, had similar experiences. So we did that, but realized that it, in addition to being an African American experience, it was a human experience. So therefore, it crossed the board. And then the groove and all everything else that went with it just made it, you know, very, very commercial.
So did you arrange this too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And are you featured instrumentally?
I wasn't featured. I just played piano on it. Well, you know, I did some little hot licks in there and stuff like that. So,
okay. Well, let's hear Soul Man, co-written by my guest, Isaac Hayes. Guest is Isaac Hayes. You developed a style of singing in which you did long raps that kind of gave a backstory to the song, and the rap would lead you into the song. And the songs are often, you know, like pop tunes other people had written, like By the Time I Get to Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd kind of make up the whole story leading up to it. How did you start doing that, combining these raps with pop tunes?
Remember the famous quote in Cool Hand Luke? What we have here is a failure to communicate.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Sure.
Well, I did that. The rap came out of the necessity to communicate. And the way it happened was, it was a local club in Memphis, predominantly black, that was called a Tiki Club. And, you know, we would hang out there. The barcades were playing there sometimes. So we'd hang out there and sit in. You know how musicians do. And this one day I heard this song by Glen Campbell, By the Time I Get to Phoenix. I said, wow, oh, that song is great. I mean, this man must really have loved this woman. And so I ran down the studio later on that day and said, man, y'all hear this song, Phoenix? Man, it's great. Everybody, yeah, you know, no enthusiasm. I'm saying, these guys don't feel what I feel. Are they getting it? So the barcades were scheduled to play the Tiki Club a couple of days later, and I said, hey, man, I'm coming down and sit in with you guys. Learn By the Time I Get to Phoenix. They said, okay. I told him the key, and E-flat, and so I went down, and the club was packed. Go up on stage. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, y'all know him, blah, 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 Isaac Hayes. And I mean, there's all kind of conversations going, you know, blah, 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 blah. I said, oh, man, how am I going to get these people's attention? So I said, hey, man, the first chord in the song, y'all hang up on it. It's a B-flat 11. Just hang up on the chord. Just keep cycling it. And I started talking. And I just started telling this story. How it was a scenario about what could have happened to cause this man to leave, you know. And I started talking, and the conversations halfway through the rap, that conversation started to subside. And when I reached the first line in the song, when I said, by the time I get to finish, everybody went, wow. And, you know, when I finished the song, it wasn't a dry in the house.
Well, I want to play an excerpt of your recording of By the Time I Get to Phoenix. This is Isaac Hayes.
But one day, old boy got sick, and he had to come home. I don't have to tell you what he found. Oh, it hurt him so bad. He said, baby, mama, why? That's all he could say. But she said, oh, gone, fool, you doing it. But the man wasn't doing it, but that's the only excuse she could give him. He said, Mama, I can't take it. I got to leave you. I'm going to leave you. Well, she tried to straighten up. She said she was going to straighten up. She got a little job to help him out with the bills, too. But that was just a sham. Because he found it again and again. And seven times he left this woman. And seven times he came back. And he had taken all that he could stand. The eighth time that this went down, he said, Mom, I got to go. He said, I'm leaving my heart right here. Oh, I don't want to go, but I got to leave you, Mama. He said, by the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be right.
Isaac Hayes, do you feel a kind of special affinity with rap music now? Do you see do you feel a connection between what you were doing and what's being done now?
Well, some people try to equate it, in the sense that it's rap. Now, the only way I came close to this rap is the first verse in the song Shaft, and that is, who's a black private dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks? Well, that's rhythm. That's rapping in rhythm. And that's what this rap is today. I think that's the only similarity that I might have with the rap of today. Everything else, it differs.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Shaft, because that's the next stop on on this tour of your work. Now, you recorded the theme for the movie Shaft in, I guess it was 1971. How were you asked to do this?
Well, it was a whole concept. Melvin Van Peebles had put out a movie called Sweetback's Badass Song. And they said, it might be a market there. We had a meeting out there at MGM with Stax execs, and they asked me to come. And they talked about the concept. And would I do the music? Would I be interested in doing the music? Yeah. I said, I want to act too, man. Have y'all cast for the lead role? Well, I don't know. We'll look into that. But anyway, I think that was a sticking carrot, you know. So,
right.
So I agreed to do the music. They had already cast Richard Roundtree, which was rightfully so. He's perfect for the part. And I agreed to do the music. And that's how that whole thing, that whole idea came about.
Here's where you really get into orchestrating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you started using that wah-wah guitar funk style.
What happened was, I had been doing arranging all the time. I did a lot of arranging with the horns and stuff at Stax, and the first string arrangements I tried was a thing that Dave and I did on Sam and Dave. And that album was like a big flop. But we tried it anyway, but I had a taste for it. And once I tasted the strings, I couldn't let it go. Now, when sometimes in the studio you're working on various grooves and stuff and you can't find a name for it or you can't tag it with anything, you just, if it feels good, You say, okay, I'm going to file that. And you put it up. You put it back and you store it. Now, when it was time for me to do the Shaft theme, I said, what can I do? They explained the character to me, you know, a relentless character, always on the move, always on the prowl. And you got to get something to denote that for the main theme. I said, what can I do? I thought about, if you remember Otis Redding's Try a Little Tenderness, I had a hand in that arrangement too. In the end, Al Jackson was doing some stuff on a hi-hat cymbal. You know, you got to na-na-na, boom, you know. So I thought about that. I said, maybe if I just sustain that particular thing on the hi-hat, that would give you a dramatic effect as something that's relentless. Now, what else can I do? I thought about the guitar lick. And I went and pulled it out, played it, and Charles Pitts, we call him Skip, he played the thing on the wah-wah. I said, hey, play this line. And he started it. And I told Willie, the drummer, I said, Willie Hall, I said, give me that hi-hat, man, some 16 notes, you know. And he did that, and it worked. I said, that's the kind of dramatic effect I want. Then I started putting the other things in, you know, the bass, the accents and all that stuff. But that's how that whole wah-wah thing came about.
Well, why don't I play some of your theme from Shaft, a classic. This is Isaac Hayes.
Let's get back to Terry's 1994 interview with Isaac Hayes, who worked at the Stax record label in the 1960s.
Now, there's something I've been hoping to be able to play for you for a long time, and I'm just thrilled I have the opportunity to do it now. I want to play this record for you, and tell me, I figure you've probably heard it, and you could tell me what you think of it. So let's hear an excerpt, and then we'll talk about it.
Who's the black private dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks? Can you dig it? Who's the cat that won't cop out when there's danger all about? Right on. Black private eye, whose mastermind has got him what he wanted. Shaft. Shaft is the man.
Isaac Hayes, you recognize the recording?
Yeah.
Now, what did you think of Sammy Davis doing Shaft?
Well, I mean, I was thrilled, you know. I mean, you know, Sam and I were friends, and he wanted to do it, you know. And in fact, the night that we were in the studio doing that, it was the Golden Globe Awards. And I had no idea I would win, so Lou Gossett received the award in my stead. And I was in the studio with Sammy. Oh, wow.
It just seemed, you know, it's just really funny it's so out of character for him. I mean, he was going through this real kind of groovy period, I guess.
Yeah. You know Sammy, you know, he was into what was happening now, which is good. You know, he rolled with the trends.
And then years later came I'm Gonna Get You Sucker, Keenan Ivory Wayans, loving satire of all the blaxploitation films, which of course you co-starred in. It's a wonderful film. You must have really enjoyed that.
Oh, man, we laughed throughout that film. I mean, we blew so many takes because it was hard to keep a straight face, you know.
Now, you know, at the time that Shaft and Superfly were really popular, I mean, everybody now, all the black filmmakers now, just credit those films with paving the way to all the new work that's happening now. But at the time, the NAACP was appalled at the black action films. And I wonder what your reaction was then to their reaction.
Well, you know, I had mixed emotions about that. That position was that, you know, it was painting a bad image, you know, for the kids and so forth, and there were no alternatives. Had there been some alternatives at that time, then I don't think the NAACP would have come down so hard. But what happened was, when they did that, it was like it turned off the tap. It totally dried up for us because Hollywood said, whoops, hands off. And they dropped everything, and our whole little thing just died. I think, you know, in hindsight, had there been a little more patience at the time, maybe it could have taken off in some other directions, because that was in, it was in its embryonic stage at that time, you know, the black cinema. And anything in its infancy, you're going to get some, you're going to get a lot of crap. You're going to get some inferior things and all of that, and the quality and so forth, and even questionable subject matters. But as the as that particular genre grows, then, you know, you start getting better films and so forth. And I think it, they might have made the move a little bit too soon, because when we were doing these things, we weren't taking ourselves seriously, not as the characters. We were just glad to get the work, glad to get the experience, glad that our people could see us on screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and...
And as leading men.
Yeah. You know, and not with a broom and a mop and bowing and say, yes, sir, boss.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so that's why it took off and it was so widely received. And I think had a little time to go, a little longer, you know, you split off in some other areas and Hollywood would have recognized that there is more that could sell than, you know, the pimps and the hookers and, you know, the private eyes and so forth.
I want to spend a couple of minutes talking with you about how you developed your image. When did you start shaving your head?
I started shaving my head not long after I got out of high school.
It wasn't fashionable then.
No, it wasn't.
To my knowledge. So what inspired you to do it?
Well, you know, during those times as musicians, it was a fad. We had a relax in our hair. Called it a conk process. And during that time, mine was cut very low and just slicked down on my head like all the way around like a coconut, you know. And it was hip. It was a style. But in the summertime, it was hard to keep up. And you sweat and it come undone and you had to sleep with a stocking cap on, all that kind of stuff. I said, I'm sick of fooling with this stuff. I'm going to cut it off. So I went to the barbershop around the corner from Stacks. I said, Mr. King, cut it all off. What? Cut it all off. I'm going to grow a new crop. And when he cut it off, you know, I went outside, you know, and I said, wow, it's a breeze out here. It feels great. I can feel the wind on my head. Hey, I think I'll keep it like this. I already had the beard. And people would look at me and say, oh, wow, oh, look at this guy, man. He's got ball in the beard. But I didn't care because it was different. I like being different. You know, I like swimming upstream. And a funny thing, one time, Booker T, by some error, had somebody book two dates on the same day for Booker T and MGs. And one date was in, I think Booker had to go to Oklahoma somewhere. And I went to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania with Al, Duck, and Steve. And David Porter was a vocalist. And I was to pretend to be Booker T. And I'm at the organ. We kicked off the tune, kicked off Green Onions, you know, and grooving. Somebody said, hey, man, ain't no Booker T. He ain't got no hair. And, I mean, they were ready to riot. I jumped up from the organ and got out there with David, started dancing and singing and doing everything, trying to appease the people, you know. But finally, they said, well, okay, what the hell, we'll accept him.
Are you still doing it?
Oh, yeah. You see, the thing about it is, it's ageless. So when I go naturally, no one will know.
I thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, Terry, it's been my pleasure.
Isaac Hayes speaking with Terry Gross in 1994. He's among the artists who worked for Stax Records in the 60s. Stax's 50th anniversary is being celebrated with concerts and reissues and the documentary Respect Yourself, the Stax Records story, which airs next week on PBS.